Isn't that a great story? Right, okay, I'll try it again. Isn't that a great story? Come on, we need some reaction here. Isn't that a great story? Yeah. Like Joe reminded us earlier, it's the only story in the Bible which is found in all the four Gospels. It must be very, very important. You know what? I am really, really excited. I can't contain it. I'm really, really excited. We have been thinking about this for a few months. I'm really excited about the Feed the 5,000 project we as a church are going to be thinking about, but also practicing this year, because the potential is huge. Who here is excited about the Feed the 5,000 project? Okay, seven of you. That's brilliant. That's a great start, actually. That's a really good start, because this is something we're going to do the whole year. So some of us will take time to get there. But I'm really excited about the Feed the 5,000, but I am more excited about what God is able to do through ordinary people like me. I'm not sure about you. When I look at the mirror, I often say, God, why would you choose someone like me? Why would you use someone like me? Do you do that? I often do that. God has always been in the business of using ordinary children like you and like you and like you. God has been in the business of using ordinary people to do extraordinary things. And I'm really excited about God doing what he does best through people like you and me. I want to ask you a question. It's a very simple question that you guys can think of as well. Did Jesus need the bread and the fish of the little boy to feed? Well, I think it's about 18,000 people, actually, because it's men, women, children, yeah. So did Jesus really need the bread and the fish that belonged to the little boy to feed 5,000 people? Take 30 seconds, turn to your neighbor and ask the question, did Jesus really need it? Yeah. You think yes? Yeah. Why do you think it's yes?
They must be very hungry.
Yeah, they must be very hungry, that's right. What about you, Phoebe? Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Okay. That's great. I'm not sure what your conversations are like, but we have had a conversation here and we've decided Jesus really needed it. Did Jesus really need the disciples to do the organizing of them into 50 people? Did Jesus really need them to go find? Hey, have any of you tried taking a lunch off a little boy? Have you tried that? I try that all the time. Every day I try. Can I have the chips? No. Have you tried it? So did Jesus really need the lunch box, the tiffin box of the little boy? I think the answer is no. Actually, the God who created the heavens and the earth, the God who raised Lazarus from the dead, the God who fed 5,000 people, did not actually need the tiffin box of a little person like you. But here's the thing, God does choose to use it. Think about it. God chooses to take that little tiffin box and feed the 5,000 people or 18,000 people. Now, my final question at this part. Did Jesus change his strategy of living and being with people? Or in other words, has God changed his mind about using ordinary people in feeding 5,000 people. The thing is, sometimes we, as followers of Jesus, have come to believe that God can't use us. In fact, there are some false teaching in the church called cessationists who believe God has stopped working in that way. God only works in this little boxed way. Although we probably are not like that as a church, some of us have actually bought into that false teaching. God worked that way all those years ago, but he doesn't work and use people like you and me. That is false teaching. Of course, the shape of that is very different. The shade of that is very different. It looks very, very different today. So I want to ask you, I wonder if God is able to use your tea bag. Or coffee. Is God able to use our coffee? What do you mean? Yep. You don't understand. That's a great question. So you don't understand what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the little things that we have, the gifts that we have, say, for example, a smile. Look at your face. A smile, as simple as that, God is able to use that. Yeah? God is able to use the little things we have, like tea bags and dining. Is God able to use our ordinary dining tables? And that's why I say, imagine what God is able to do on our dining tables. My final point. I keep saying this again and again, don't I? That's because I haven't got notes. That's okay. My final point is this. For the little boy, I believe it was a choice. It was a choice, wasn't it? He had to, when Peter went up to him and said, hey, little boy, come on, give me your bread and your fish. The little boy perhaps could say, like I often hear, no! Or he could say, have it, I get your style, have it. It's a choice. And for some of us in this journey of Feed the 5,000, it's going to take a while. It's going to be a big, big challenge. You want to ask the question, what is it? What is Feed the 5,000? I know some of you haven't heard what the Feed the 5,000 is. Do you want to know what it is? I will explain to you. Right, Mike, please can I have my computer, please? Okay, those of you, oh dear, Chris, sort me out here. I need it. If my PowerPoint does not work, I'll have to use the Lord's power to make my point. Hey, let's go. Right. What is Feed the 5,000? Come on. Chris. Chris, what's going on? Can I just take the opportunity to really celebrate Chris? Chris is a guy who actually, on the background, make life for church happen. You don't know this. You think I create all these fantastic PowerPoints. I'm very clever. In fact, I get a lot of help from Chris. Often in the background, without much singing and dancing. You better get this sorted, Chris, because I'm saying good things about you. Hey, there we go. Thank you very much. Will it work? Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. Yes, indeed. Can I just say, he does that every day for me. I'm always like, Chris, what's the problem? There we go. Feed the 5,000 St. Mark's is this. In 2018, we as a church are going to do this. There are three things I want to very briefly say. First is, what is it? Second is, who is it for? Who is going to invite? And who is going to be invited? And the third is, the most important one, why are we doing this? The first is, what is it? Feed the 5,000 is an initiative where individuals and families in the life of our church are pledging to have a meal or a cup of coffee or a barbecue in the winter. No, in the summer, afternoon tea, perhaps a glass of cold water, perhaps a cheese and wine, or anything else, jollof rice if you like. If can I just say, if you want to cook jollof rice, please invite me. I love jollof rice. Anything you want, you're having with someone in 2018. Who might we invite? The answer is, anyone can be invited. Anybody can be invited. And the answer is, it could be another church member you don't know well. Did you know some of you have been going to this church for 30 years? Some of you have been going to this church for a few weeks. Some of you have been going to this church for 60 years. It is possible that someone who's been going to church for 40 years don't know the person who someone's going for 15 years. There's an opportunity for perhaps for you to invite someone in the life of a church you don't know well. It could be the young people inviting the not so young. Why is that? Because the church is the only place actually in contemporary culture where people who are in their 80s can even have an interaction with somebody in their 20s, for example. Only place in any sensible way possible. Church is the only avenue in Western society. This is about young inviting the old. This is the old inviting the young. It is about individuals inviting families, and it is about families inviting individuals. It is about small groups inviting other small groups. Is that a great opportunity? One Wednesday evening, Tuesday evening, hey, listen, why don't we have a small group meeting with somebody, other small group? Invite them. Plan it. It takes only a week or so. Groups organizing socials, inviting others who are not part of home groups, perhaps. It is perhaps a student. You know, our students, there are a significant number of them. They are hidden in the life of our church, I find. But actually, they find themselves on the crossroads of life. It is an opportunity for us to get to know them. And for us here, the huge privilege of students from around the globe, every continent indeed. We have the opportunity of inviting someone on your front line. Hey, listen, why don't you come out for a meal or a cup of coffee? It could be a person who's homeless. It could be a person who is your neighbor. Do you know your neighbor? Did you know, I think something like a very small number of us actually know our neighbors. And Jesus asked us to love our neighbors. Perhaps an Eritrean refugee. You know, I'm not sure if you were here at the Pentecost service this year. I was so moved. It was my highlight of my year, 2017, to hear Simon's story. Simon is a young Eritrean lad who is part of the Tuesday evening congregation. He walked deserts. And you know the boats that capsized? He was in one of them. He is part of our community. Of course, in a distance on Tuesday evening, but nevertheless, he's part of our church. Perhaps it's an opportunity this year for perhaps one of you to invite some of our Eritrean brothers in Christ. A stranger. Now, we live in a culture of stranger danger. Be sensible, but don't forget scriptures time and time again says invite strangers. So it's not just about actually me inviting someone whom I like, my cricket buddies, for example. It is about crossing those barriers of ethnicity and class. Because I was studying this week the book of Acts. I am so struck by the fact that there is no monocultural church, not in Antioch. The thriving church has been one that crossed those boundaries of ethnicity and race. Do not forget to entertain strangers, because by doing so, some of people have entertained angels. Who knows? On your tables, you might have some angels this year. Finally, why are we doing this? Firstly, I think we're doing this is because this is us becoming a welcoming church. It is not possible to have a welcoming church if we don't have hospitable people. There is a connection. If the 200 of us are not hospitable people, we can't be a welcoming church. So this year, we are going to be learning quite a lot about the virtue of hospitality the Western world has lost. I think it's incredibly missional. It's about us becoming a welcoming church. It's us becoming hospitable people. It is, oh dear. Oh dear, what is this? This is about learning. Anybody here thinks there's an easy thing to do as a church? No. This is going to be such, this is going to be messy, I tell you. Because especially when you cross those barriers of class and race, there are some real, real issues. But guess what? Being disciples of Jesus happens in that. That is a conduit for those discipleships to happen. This is going to be messy. Hey, who asked for an easy life here? Is that right? This is about us becoming hospitable people. This is about eating and drinking, it becoming the place where relationships can happen. And of course, it's a very spiritual activity in the Bible because Jesus was actually accused, wasn't he? He was accused of eating and drinking with the wrong kind of people. And he, of course, ate his way through the Gospels. And in this term, we're going to be looking at 8, 9, or 10 different places in the book of Luke alone where Jesus is around a table like this. And of course, Jesus revealed in the breaking of bread. Who knows what God might do? It might be business as usual, but I sense that perhaps if we were to make the choice like a little boy, God might do his business, even through people like you and me. Let's pray.